You're listening to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland, and we're continuing our special two-hour innovation program from the 4850-foot level at the Sanford Underground Research Facility. And joining me now is Bonnie Fleming, and we're going to talk about neutrinos and the Dune experiment, deep underground neutrino experiment, right?
Yep.
I'm catching on. I didn't even write it down. So what is it? I mean, we're in the cavern where Ray Davis discovered neutrinos.
Yes, the story of Ray Davis is a wonderful story, and it's such a good beginning to the future experiment, the Dune experiment. So Ray Davis looked up at the sun and measured the neutrinos coming from the sun in a big tank of dry cleaning fluid here in the Davis Cavern, underground in the Homestake Mine. And when the electron neutrinos passed through the essentially dry cleaning fluid, they turned it into argon. And he would detect the amount of argon in the neutrino detector, and that was proportional to the number of neutrinos coming from the sun. And he did this for many years. This experiment ran from about 1970 to 1994, and he saw fewer neutrinos than electron neutrinos than he expected coming from the sun. And the theory was that the neutrinos were oscillating away or disappearing into other kinds of neutrinos as they traveled from the sun to the Davis Cavern here in the Homestake Mine. But the way that it's such a good story is people had a hard time believing that that was actually what was happening. So he persevered, and he kept refining the experiment and making a better experiment. And in the end, he won a Nobel Prize. He won a Nobel Prize for detection of cosmic neutrinos. And later, just in 2015, there was a Nobel Prize for this phenomena that neutrinos morph or oscillate between their different flavors. So he was really an incredible and perseverant scientist to stick to the data, to pay attention to the data, and see, in fact, that this incredible result that neutrinos oscillate. And that is, that needs to be true for this Dune experiment to happen.
And talk then and describe what the Dune experiment is going to do to expand on what we already know.
So that neutrinos oscillate tell us that neutrinos have mass. Neutrinos are very abundant, fundamental. They're one of the building blocks of the matter in the universe, but they're very, very tiny. So for a long time, we thought they may have no mass, like a light particle. And Ray Davis's experiment showed us that they, because they have this phenomena, there's three of them that oscillate between those different flavors, they have mass. So they make up the matter of the universe. And there are some confusing questions about the matter of the universe. We can, in the laboratory, start with a bath of energy and create matter in equal amounts by creating antimatter. So, for example, you can create an electron which has negative one charge, and you create an anti-electron at the same time as with positive one charge, and you haven't changed the overall balance of charge in the universe. It's very symmetric. And those two matter and antimatter particles then annihilate again into a puff of energy. So it's a nice symmetric process. Energy, matter, antimatter, energy again. We think that's what should have happened at the beginning of the universe, in the early universe, which was a bath of energy, and you can create these equal amount of matter and antimatter, and they annihilate again. Fortunately, that didn't happen, because we're left over with a little matter in the universe, which is what we're made of. So what we're doing with neutrinos, which we know are matter, Ray Davis told us that, is trying to see if there's a difference between neutrinos and antineutrinos, such that would give us a clue for why we live in a matter-dominated universe. So are neutrinos the reason we exist?
Okay. And then, I mean, I describe it that you're going to create neutrinos, right? And you're going to capture and shoot them across from Fermilab to a mile underground here, where they're going to catch them and interpret how they change?
Yes, exactly. So Ray Davis was looking at these electron neutrinos that traveled from the sun to the Earth, and on the way they changed. They evolved over time, as all matter particles do, and they oscillated to different flavors. We're doing a similar thing, but here on Earth, but we need a long distance Ray Davis had the advantage that the distance from the sun to the Earth is pretty large. We have to create a neutrino beam at Fermilab outside of Chicago and shoot it 800 miles to give the neutrinos time to change or evolve and detect them here in the Homestake Mine in South Dakota at SURF. And we'll do that first with neutrinos and see how they behave, and then with antineutrinos and see how they behave and compare the two. And again, look for differences in how they traveled to give us this clue to our matter-dominated universe.
And this detector that's going to be placed here, I mean, is this something that's going to have to evolve and sensitivities change over a period of time to get different kinds of data or more specific data?
It won't necessarily change over time once we build it. It is a really hard detector to build. It's a precision neutrino detector. It will be, it's called a liquid
argon. It's not a tank.
It's a big tank, but it's filled with liquid argon. Okay. Many previous neutrino detectors are big tanks, like Ray Davis's tank, but filled with water or dry cleaning fluid or oil. This instead is four gigantic tanks, each filled with liquid argon, which is liquid. Argon is about 1% of the atmosphere, and it's liquid only between 87 and 90 degrees Kelvin. So it's hard to get, even to procure, a giant tank of liquid argon. But building this kind of detector means that we can see neutrinos interact with photographic-like quality, which is much more precise than the kinds of techniques that have been used in the past. And it is a huge challenge because so far we've only built these detectors sort of on the school bus size scale. And now we're scaling them up to the football field scale. Exactly. And a mile underground.
Right. Okay, so talk a little bit about your role in this experiment.
Well, I've been working in neutrino oscillation physics for a long time, for 20 years, primarily at Fermilab, meaning looking for neutrinos morphing between their different flavors. And the experiment that I'm presently leading on site at Fermilab is looking for neutrinos traveling on the order of 500 meters, so relatively short distances. And the kind of detector that we're using is, like Dune will be, a liquid argon time projection chamber. And so school bus size, but very precise detector. And we are looking for different physics than Dune is looking for. On Microboon, if we see a signal, it'll be an indication of a new kind of neutrino, potentially called a sterile neutrino. And that's the physics of what we're doing. The technology of what we're doing is really learning how to build this precision neutrino detector to be able to then move on and build the Dune experiment. So I'm also a collaborator on the Dune experiment, and in the process of, we're in the design phase leading up to construction of the experiment.
And a neutrino detection is more of a flash of light, not a sound, not a wave. It
can be a flash of light. Neutrinos mostly pass through us. There's neutrinos everywhere. About a trillion pass through your hand every couple seconds. They come in a broad range of different energies. And when we see them only when they hit something, essentially. So mostly they pass right through. Sometimes they hit something and turn into a particle we can see. So an electron neutrino will hit something like where your target is water or argon or dry cleaning fluid and turn into an electron. And the electron we can see both by seeing the charge that it leaves and the light that it leaves. If it's a muon neutrino, it turns into a muon. If it's a tau neutrino, it turns into a tau. Those are the three kinds of neutrinos. So it's really hard to detect neutrinos, and we do only when we see the leftovers of when it hits something in the detector. In these liquid argon detectors, we see the neutrinos or the debris from the interaction in two ways. An electron neutrino comes in, produces an electron by hitting the argon, and the electron travels through the liquid argon and knocks off free electrons in the liquid argon as it goes. So it leaves little trails of so-called ionization electrons exactly along the path where it went. And we set up a huge electric field and drift that shadow of the interaction to the edge of the detector and read it out. It also produces light. So we also see a light signature, and we pick up the light signature in the detector as well.
And it travels in a straight line?
The light travels isotropically out to the edge of the detector for the most part, and we pick it up with light collection devices, photomultiplier tubes at the edge of the detector. But the real precision of this detector is that photographic-like 3D image of the path that the particles took that's mapped out by these ionization electrons.
I'm going to ask you the same type of question I asked earlier, and why do we need to care?
Well,
I mean, why do we need to understand this?
Why do we need to understand this? I would like to know how we live in a matter-dominant universe. That's a very fundamental question. That's why I paraphrased it, are neutrinos the reason we exist? And mm-hmm. it really is not understood at all. We know very little about the universe, and the ordinary matter that makes us up is only 4-ish% of the universe anyway. The rest of the universe is dark matter and dark energy. But even that small percentage that makes up us, we don't know why we're here. We don't know what happened such that we were left with this tiny bit of matter. That's you and me and the Earth and the particle physics detectors on mm-hmm. Earth and the stars and the galaxies and everything we see. And people have been trying to look for matter-antimatter differences for a long time. They've looked in the quark sector. They can't find any big differences. So in some sense, neutrinos are our last hope. Is there some difference that we can explain this? And that's very fundamental. Understanding why we exist is very fundamental.
But that's not
Doesn't
yet.
That excite you?
Yeah, it does. But we can't quite explain it yet.
Absolutely not. We cannot.
Do you think we ever will?
Absolutely. Yes.
That's why you're
May
here.
May take a while.
That's
but
your
yes,
existence.
Just like Ray Davis, we have to persevere.
And so you're doing the school bus size experiment to help pave the way for the football field size experiment.
Yes.
Underground that is... Ribbon cutting is coming soon.
Yes,
later this month. And then, is it going to get bigger? Is it going to get more? Do you yet know what other questions need to be answered from this?
That's a good question. It's hard to think of the next scale when this already seems very large, and this truly will be a facility that goes well beyond even the physics that I described. This facility will run for decades. We'll look for neutrinos from all over the universe. We'll look for neutrinos coming from supernova, from neutron stars. We'll learn probably more than we've thought about yet. And if history is our guide, a transformational new technology, particularly on this scale, you usually learn things that you didn't expect to learn.
So the questions have yet to be formed.
Some of them, and already the ones we have are so interesting.
Okay. And how does this then, is there a correlation at all with the search for dark matter in what we learn from neutrinos?
That's interesting. Certainly, neutrinos and dark matter share the fact that they're both ghostly particles and hard to interact, although we haven't even seen dark matter yet, but that's what we think. And the detectors share a lot of similarities. Liquid noble gas detectors are quite prevalent in dark matter, like right here in Homestake with the LUX experiment, a liquid xenon experiment that ran until very recently underground. So there's certainly a lot of technology. There's a lot of the ways that we think the two kinds of particles interact, not much. And certainly both of them will tell us very interesting things about the universe. In the case of dark matter, that's 25% of the universe that we don't quite understand, but we believe is out there.